Blog Talk Radio.
The 2014 FIFA World Cup Review Show. Hello, everyone, and finally, it all comes to an end at the Maracanã. This is, of course, the 2014 FIFA World Cup Review Show on the Foyer Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. Thank you so much for listening live today and, of course, catching it later on archive. We waited up till extra time, at the end of extra time, to see what's going to happen, to see what will be and who will be the winners. Will it go to a penalty kick shootout? And it all ends on the foot of Mario Götze as Germany wins their fourth World Cup title and the first European side to win it in the Americas, the first European side winning it, South America. Joining me, of course, former Fox Soccer analyst and my good friend Gary Richards. Carter Krishnar will be joining us a little bit later on the show. But, Gary, this was probably the overall, I think this is probably the best World Cup we've seen in a long time, and I believe that Germany was the best team in this World Cup, and they deserved it.
Absolutely. You just got to give it to them. I mean, there were some tired legs out there today. Both teams seemed to be tiring within the first 90 minutes, so you got to dig down, you got to dig deep, and even the commentators were just saying as the trophy was being presented, think about the moment that you're at right now and think about what to do next time. Dig deeper. Remember what you've just been through and just make sure you try not to let that happen again.
Absolutely. And, of course, many people were hoping to see a South American champion in South America at the Maracanã in Argentina. I guess the major question is this. Did they have enough quality in the squad outside of Lionel Messi to pull this off? Because I think we've said it many times. Argentina didn't look so good at the start of the tournament. Maybe they looked better as the tournament did progress. But at the end of it all, Argentina, while they did make the final, did they have enough quality to win this?
I think what let them down was the front players. You know, when you look at Germany scoring 18 goals in the entire tournament and Argentina only scoring 8, you can't rely on just Messi. You notice that with Germany at the end there, you know, close to coming off and where their main striker, they had to rely on the midfielders coming through. And Mario Götze comes up big when he needed to. It's a great substitution. Look at the substitutions that Argentina made. Didn't do it. Didn't step up when they needed to. That's the real difference in the game. And as far as the tournament, again, 8 goals is not going to win you a tournament.
Absolutely. Very, very true. And I guess the main question is this with Messi and Argentina, because as we all know, Messi's never played a single minute of club football in Argentina. It's been Barcelona this and Barcelona that, even though he is a member of this national team. Maybe there's not enough chemistry with these players playing with Lionel Messi, as great as he is.
I think you saw that. You know, he's getting the Golden Boot Award for the tournament, and I find that hard to fathom as it is. You know, Mascherano played so much better in the entire tournament than he did, and that's just for Argentina. But Golden Boot would normally go, I would probably say Schweinsteiger, the way he's played. Closer, any of the number of the winning players in the winning team should have got that award. Messi was 25 feet, 30 feet away from the rest of his players. We're getting you ready to go up and get this award, but where's the team spirit there? Why wasn't he a part of that? He seemed very dejected, as you would be, but there was no camaraderie about, hey, don't worry, dudes. No, we did it as a team. We lost it as a team. We'll stick together as a team. And they just didn't have that. I think with Maradona, you know, he came from Argentina, played in Argentina, managed Argentina, and there's so much more of a folklore. He's more willing to do interviews. He's more willing to put himself out there, whether it be good, whether it be bad. And so there's a lot more togetherness or understanding for him as a person. And Messi, because he's almost Spanish at this point, being at Barcelona for so long. So I think there's a little bit of a disconnect from the Argentine fans and even some of the players.
Just saw Germany on the winner's podium inside the Maracanã. They accepted the little golden trophy. They have won their fourth World Cup championship, and the celebrations are on in Munich, in Dortmund, and all over Germany as they have won once again their fourth title. All the Germans right now celebrating this big tournament and this big championship. That goal in second half extra time, Gary, was a fantastic shot by Mario Götze, how he was just able to bend it past the defender and past Romero for the only tally in this match. And once again, just great action, maybe a little defensive here and there, but at least in extra time, both sides went for it.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, do you want to go to penalties? You know, it's a team sport and a team game that comes down to individuals. You don't want to be the one individual that loses it and makes that mistake or the error or a great save. So, yeah, you want to try and get it done when you can, and that's, you know, within the main frame of play, whether it be the 90 minutes or the 30 minutes of extra time. So, yeah, I think, you know, both started to stretch a little bit. Defense weren't pushing out. I mean, you've got to give credit to Argentina's defense. I mean, you talk about a class in how to park the bus. They did that, but they did it in a very good professional way, if there is such a thing. They conceded, you know, very few goals in the tournament, and they proved it today, you know, with exception of that one error where the defender just didn't go with Götze and left him open. But you've got to give all credit. Sharma getting that ball across and taking his legs, tired legs to get down the wing and cross that ball over. But Götze chested it, had the wherewithal that it dropped perfectly for him to hit it first time. Nine times out of ten, you'll do that in training. It'll go in. You get a chance out on the field during a game, and it goes wide, or the keeper gets the save. Look at Higuain. A couple of the times that he had chances for Argentina, it just, you know, they came off the shin. It just wasn't working on the day. It's millimeters that make a difference in a game of those that can and those that can't. And Götze is certainly going to be the pride of Germany tonight.
Absolutely. Let's talk about both keepers. I mean, Neuer, who plays for Bayern Munich, he was just absolutely fantastic out there. Romero for Argentina, I thought they made some very solid saves when they had to inside the first 90 minutes of this matchup, and, of course, going to extra time. But, you know, do you compare or can you compare Neuer to maybe Oliver Kahn, who has won or has done fantastic things for German football back in those days in the 80s and 90s?
I think so. I mean, you're looking at a lot of talk about how does America, U.S., produce such great goalkeepers. You know, you start looking down the ranks, and, Germany are no different. You know, they've had some tremendous goalkeepers over the years. Oliver Kahn was a huge impact in how Germany would win. And he played that kind of sweeper. He gave defenders confidence that you weren't afraid to pass it back, that you didn't have to clear it. And I think Neuer's done the same thing. Most touches outside the box as a sweeper than any keeper in the tournament. And he stepped up big when he needed to, and he does often. But, you know, you're playing in front of a tremendous back four. You're playing for, a Champions League, usually in the final top team in Bayern Munich. And then you've got to look at Argentina. Their goalkeeper, he's a backup at Monaco, was, you know. And you look at that and go, that's a tremendous effort, even from him. So it did. It came down to very few chances. And on the day, you put it down to a mistake from defense on Argentina, which had the best defense in the championship, I feel. Zabaleta is the best player at right back out there that I've seen in many a year, and you've got to give him credit as a standout player.
Oh, Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, we've always talked about, you know, where you're going to find the players from within the country, or maybe you find those players that have a dual nationality, like what the U.S. has done with several German-American players like Jermaine Jones, like Julian Green, obviously going into Mexico, like a Joe Corona, who is both American and Mexican. And now the question is this, is that because you have Sami Khedira, who is obviously not of German descent, but born in the country, Mesut Ozil at the same time, born in the country, but not, as they would say, truly German descent. But now they've proven that they can be accepted and they can go out there and they can perform for Germany. Do you think now that German football has at least, for like the last World Cup and this World Cup, now they can take in anyone they want and they can perform at the highest level, not only in the Bundesliga, but for the national team?
Oh, that's a loaded question. It really is, Daniel. You know, anyone gets accepted when you win. You don't get accepted, you know, and a lot of criticism comes upon you when you don't win. You know, and I'm sure we'll talk about Brazil at some point. But, Ozil, I mean, he's a tremendously gifted player. Sami Khedira also, and it was such a shame to see him miss out on the final today. Both gifted players. You know, the true way of this was that you were born in that country, you were bred in that country, and there's such a crossover now, and we're all mutts as far as anything goes anymore, you know, and so that defines lines and it crosses lines, and I don't think it really matters as much anymore. You know, if you're starting to look at, you know, well, my third cousin on the second half, you know, second hand removed, was German, so I'm going to opt for play for Germany and give it a shot, then I think you're stretching it a little bit. But, you know, it's really going to have to be redefined with FIFA in the next 4, 8, 12 years as we move forward to what is acceptable and what's not. You know, Jürgen Klinsmann comes into the U.S. and takes over, and he uses an awful lot of that German influence to grab those players that may otherwise slip through the U.S. And thank goodness, because the U.S. certainly did themselves proud in this World Cup. But maybe some of those players may not have been pulled into the U.S. system, may not have had the opportunity. And so we've got to be thankful for that. And going forward, I think that's going to be the same sort of thing, depending on who you've got, depending on how you can pull things together. Will that be acceptable? Will it not be acceptable? What are they going to be the rules for this going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, another thing we got to talk about with FIFA is concussions. We saw what happened to Christoph Kramer, unfortunately. Purely accidental, obviously, gets his bell rung early in the first half, and then, of course, was able to go back out there. Many still screaming he should never have returned to the field, and then all of a sudden that's the end of it for him. And around the 31st minute, he fell down again, still groggy, still not having his full faculties in front of him. And while he's out there celebrating, obviously, shame he couldn't finish this matchup. What do we have to see what FIFA's going to do? And you know Taylor Twellman from ESPN, how he's trying to change the way that concussions are handled during these matches while they're being played. What is the answer to saving a career when it comes to these types of situations?
As a striker, I've been taken out many, many a time, and it's, you know, you get up and you play on and you carry on. It's not till years later that you start suffering the effects of what's happened. I think going forward, it's getting more and more aware of what this is. This should be, you've got a neutral doctor standing on the sideline there that comes out, can certainly tell within seconds whether this player is fit to continue or not fit to continue. And that, I think, should be made allowance to where they do a substitution that doesn't count against you. You've got three subs that you can use, tactically, injuries, etc. I think this should be a case where this type of injury shouldn't go against the team. And maybe try and use a substitution that doesn't go against those three. That kind of gives you that fourth one. And you're not going to be able to fake it and try and, you know, we're going to use six subs because we've all got concussions, like some possibly might try, because everything that can be attempted will be attempted. However, I just think that might be a way that we can immediately, because every player wants to go back out. I'm fine. Stick me back in. You've seen it, you know, Sonny Liston, Joe, you know, Joe Boxer X out there in a boxing ring doing the same thing, and you've got to throw in the white towel. And I think you have to do that with these players. You know, you've got to make the decision. It should be a neutral doctor that's out there just says, uh-uh, he's not going back out. It's just not worth his health. Because as a youngster, you're playing out there, you don't realize what's good for you and not what's bad for you. All you want to do is go out there and play for your jersey.
Absolutely. And let me ask you this, because I know you watched the Uruguay-England match, and Alvaro Pereira, who was concussed, and I don't think the doctors, in that situation, while, you know, you're screaming for the doctors to try and hold him back, to say to him, listen, we need to evaluate you to see if you can go back, he got up so fast, he's wagging his finger, no, 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 I don't want to go back in, I want to go back in, I don't want to be taken out. And then he goes back in, and what does that say about the player? Because I understand people were upset that he was allowed to go back in when it's really his own fault, because he's the one that didn't want to be taken out. He wanted to go back in. It wasn't the coach's decision. He said he wants to go back in. I mean, that's a situation where we need to have at least the Players Association for the worldwide body to say, listen, you know, if you're coming out because of a concussion, don't wag your finger telling your coach you want back in. Don't take me out.
Okay, well, let's talk it on the other way. Yeah, we're not going to use it as a gimme substitution because this guy's got a concussion now. So let's look at it as a, you know, immediate, right, you're going to sit out. We'll put somebody in for 5 minutes, and you can sit out for 5 minutes and see if you come around. If you're not better in 5 minutes, or where the doctors don't feel that you are, then you're out of the game completely. Something like that has got to be introduced. You know, and there's always the naysayers and the, you know, the diehards that, well, this is the way it's always been, this way it's always going to be, and it's not. The game is changing so fast. The referees can't keep up with it. The medical staff are starting to learn more than they've ever learned before about a lot of these injuries. And therefore, they're a lot more knowledgeable than the players. You've got to give them all credit for going, no, I'm fine. I want to get back out there. I want to play. I want to help our team. I need to do this for us. However, what's best for the team and best for you, not always the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely agree with you there. And as we continue on here, once again, everyone, this is the 40 Scenes Fire special, the 2014 FIFA World Cup final review show. As we've already talked about, Germany winning by a final of 1-0 in extra time, and they've won their fourth World Cup championship, the first European team to win on South America soil or in the Americas. Of course, back in 1994, the USA was hosting the World Cup, where Italy lost in the round of penalties to Brazil, and at that time, that was Brazil's fourth World Cup title. Obviously, Gary, it's been a while since England has won it, but if I can ask you this, is it or was it that important for a European side to win a World Cup outside, not just away from European soil, but on the other side of the Atlantic, because obviously the terrain is different. As we've already said before, the heat and humidity in South America was really very, very uncomfortable. What does it mean to have one of these two sides, of course, the Netherlands, going and winning the third-place match, and the Germans also now winning their fourth title in the Americas for the first time?
I think that's a huge step. You know, I think a lot of times teams will sit on their laurels, you know. Look at Brazil. And I think that system has to change because it's a disadvantage for the home team for sure. You know, you're going to have the difference in the time zones. You've got an awful lot of travel. You've got the temperament, the temperatures, as you were saying, that are completely different. You've got an awful lot that's going against you being in South America, you know, just coming out of the winter, and you're going, you know, in Europe, you're just coming into summer. There's a lot of differences that you've got to deal with there with the climate changes as well. But I think psychologically, it's always been, you know, your home soil. To win it, you know, in the Asias, that's something, again, which was completely another game altogether. South Americans always won it there. Europeans pretty much always won it there. And it's been, you know, Europeans have taken I think it's about 10 now to the South Americans' 9, plus this one makes it 11 for Europe. So definitely got the advantage there. But I think what's happening is the players, you know, Germany went out and built their entire training complex themselves. They did it down to the brick, if you will, of knowing exactly what was going to happen. This is how we're going to control everything that happens. This is going to give us the ultimate chance of trying to win the World Cup. It's paid off. Can some other clubs say that they've done that and it hasn't? You know, England have always sort of fared badly when it comes to playing in South America. There aren't many, to be honest with you, that have done exceptionally well. You've got to give it to Holland. You know, they fell at the final hurdle against a very good Argentina team. Van Persie being hurt, didn't really commit too much into the team and in too much of the game against Argentina, and Argentina took them out on penalties. I think it was a very tired Holland team. And Van Gaal, you know, got to be very disappointed not to be able to bring the keeper on like he did in the previous game for penalties when Robin Van Persie pulled himself out. And I think that's another thing when you say, you know, another time, another player, would have you pulled me off because I shouldn't have started the game, but I'm going to give it my best. I think I would have held on to Robin Van Persie in that game, maybe put him in second half and let him see what he could try and change up in that game. So, you know, with the Europeans in that game, you've just got to say, you know, they've done extremely well to do as good as they have in a Brazil that is so passionate about football. It, you know, it kind of doesn't matter who plays. As long as there's a football in between them, the Brazilians will watch.
And that, of course, when we talk about the terrain, the weather, the extreme heat in South America, obviously the next 4 years for qualifying for the World Cup will be in Russia. But now we have to worry about the next four after Russia because it's going to be in Qatar. You know, how is this going to happen? And let me just say this. You know, I would like to see at least an Arab nation host a World Cup. But because of their summer heat, which is 10 million times worse than it is here in the States, Gary, you know that being in Los Angeles. I know this in New York City, you know, Philadelphia, Florida, Texas, the summer heat is unbearable when you hope for rain coming. We don't know if it rains in the deserts in any of the African, in the Arab countries. What are we going to look for? That is, if there's going to be no change of location.
You either play them on indoor stadiums and have them completely air conditioned and controlled, or you're going to change it to maybe the U.S. I just don't see the players. A lot of money is being invested in getting this one way or the other. And I just feel that, you know, in a country, in one of the Middle Eastern countries that this is going to be held in Qatar, I think they're really going to suffer. I mean, it's 118 in the evening. Not that much difference from what it is during the day, except for the sun's actually out and beating down on you. And that is going to cause somebody to be seriously hurt, you know, dehydration, a heart attack out in the field, somebody to die almost that's playing out there that's just not been prepped properly or not aware of, you know, what's completely going into their preparation and taking it for granted. And I think then, you know, it'll change. Until then, it's going to go ahead. And it's going to, you know, I'm hoping, you know, they get the Confederations Cup in 2 years, and they're going to play that there. And I think if it doesn't go well there, you'll see a change. I think that FIFA has to put their foot down and say, okay, here's our – and that's what the Confederations Cup is about. It's a warm-up for the country that's hosting the World Cup. And when it gets to that and they host that, if it's not working, then you still have 2 years to make the change.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll see what happens there. Let me ask you a strange question, and because usually in this country, in American football, the Super Bowl spends or forces these companies to spend a lot of money on making the best commercials ever for the Super Bowl. How about those World Cup commercials from Kia and Hyundai?
All I can remember, and even in my sleep, and my wife will hate it, in my country, this is football. That's all she has to say. It's a branding thing. I get that, but they put their money behind it and said, "Yeah, let's help sponsor." Where are all the other sponsors that are so big behind sports? You know, I haven't seen an awful lot of Budweiser or major brands out there that have really got behind the World Cup. And I'm just thinking, because here's this sport taking off. And, you know, the U.S. fans have shown clearly that, you know, this is a sport to be. And baseball and the NFL and hockey out here. And it is something sporting. And where are the businesses? You can be, remember.
Yeah, absolutely. I enjoyed, actually, I did enjoy the Adriana Lima commercial. She's going to all those small American towns. She goes to the high school kids.
Sure.
Kicks the ball at the quarterback's hands, and then of course the real good one I liked was the one when Spain wins the World Cup, that all the couples had their fun with each other and they're about to give birth to their new family members, and of course the doctor's standing there going like, "I don't understand."
Yeah, tremendous. You know, soccer is all about taking a little bit of, you know, it's a game of hard knocks. You know, for Argentina, they're going to have to pick themselves up and rebuild this all over again. A lot of players are going to get maybe a week off now, to themselves, to unwind, a couple of weeks off after that before basically what's called spring training for them, prep for the next season, especially the Premiership and the League of Spain, Bundesliga in Germany. Whereas a lot of the players, you know, 1st of July, they're already back in training, ready for preseason tours. So these guys will get more time off than that. But it's still pretty much, you know, 3 weeks is your vacation. And that's it. In a 10-month season with about 3 weeks off is pretty grueling on the body.
Mm-hmm. Going back to Yogi Löw, the head coach of Germany, I guess – do you think the question all over Germany has been answered? Who was the better coach? Was it Klinsmann back in 2006, or is it Yogi Löw here in 2014? Because he did win the World Cup championship, and Germany lost in the semifinals against Italy. Do you feel that that question's been answered, or it's not really a question of discussion?
I think it's discussion. Was with both coaches. I think that maybe a little bit of lacking in experience from Cliff. Done nothing going forward with the U.S. He's been able to learn from those experiences and implement them here. And, you know, going forward, I think it's only going to help the U.S. tremendously. Yogi Löw, I think that, you know, he had the team in place already. He had the belief. He's a very quiet, low demeanor, let you get on with it. You know, I trust this is your best place. I'm putting you in your best place. Just go out and play what you naturally do. Not one German player out there looked overcoached. Now you go step back to, as we talked about the England games previously on your shows, every player mm-hmm. looked like they were playing out of position. Every kid out there with an England shirt on was looking at his notes that he'd written down, learned in training. And, of course, by the time that sinks from the brain to the feet, it's already too late. Didn't have that. Neither did the Dutch and neither did Argentina. All three of those went out there and every player was playing a position, their natural way they do things week in and week out. Don't do anything out of the ordinary. Just do what you do and do it well. And I think that was the difference. Germans have notoriously, you know, go back to their automobiles, etc., the way they build things, everything, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, do it repetitively, do it simply, do it well.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely agree with you there. You know, it just goes to show you that some people who think the right men or maybe not the right men are the right ones to run the national team. And we're watching we see Michael Ballack celebrating while the Argentine reporter is just sitting at the desk like, "Leave me alone, leave me alone." Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, they're having a blast out there. You know, I think, to be honest with you, though, you know, they had, you know, when they had the Germany-Brazil game on, and Roberto, you know, Silva, Gilberto Silva is out there. He used to play for us. He was very low. He won the World Cup. You can see the disappointment on his face, but he doesn't sort of put it all out there. And, you know, here you've got Michael Ballack running around, you know, just rubbing it in everybody's faces. Kind of don't want to see that as a commentator. You know, you're up there to give opinions. Yeah, we know you're German. You were German captain. You played in the years that you played. But, you know, keep a lid on it while you're on TV.
Yeah, absolutely. Got to keep the professionalism going here. I want to go now and talk about Brazil. And Brazil, while they did have some fantastic individual moments like that David Luiz free kick against Colombia, they had some wonderful moments on the field. Obviously, they couldn't beat Mexico, as it went scoreless, was a fantastic scoreless draw. It was well, I mean, first half was a foul fest, and then the second half was all the beauty in the world of this game. I guess the question is this, Gary, why has Brazil not looked like a team that should have at least, while they seem to have the pedigree, it just didn't seem to gel like it was?
You know, any time that you're hosting the World Cup, you don't have to play a competitive game. You know, they've traveled around the world for the last 3 years, and they're, you know, a luxury yacht, some luxury planes, and played all these friendlies. And so they're celebrity, you know, in fact, they're the Globetrotters. And until they played a competitive game, and against a really good German team, they didn't know what hit them, and I don't think they were prepared. And a lot of that has to go down to Scolari. I love him as a manager. He's done tremendous things for football over his career. I just, how naive can you have been not to realize that you're about to play one of the best teams in the world and the, you know, eventual winners of the World Cup and not see this coming? You know, maybe Jose Mourinho was right to let David Luiz leave and go to PSG from Chelsea, because he was the main liability in that team, especially at the back. He showed a lot of passion, tremendous goal, as you stated, but he would wander all over the park and never be where he was supposed to be, which is sitting there, you know, left center half, cleaning up at the back. And he was never in that position, always wandering forward, always wanted to be everywhere and do everything. And I admire that passion, but you can't. It takes 11 players in a team to win a game. It doesn't take just one to go out there and run everybody's position. I think David Luiz made that mistake. I think it's very apparent more and more in each game that they played that there was no set. You know, this is left back, this is right back, this is a center back, this is... They just seem to want to play that total football that we remember the Dutch for many years ago, but it was so naive. You know, I mean, it made a pub team look good when they were beaten against Germany, and it was just incredibly sad to think that... I put out there on Facebook, you know, it took 70 years to build a dynasty and somewhat like 30 minutes to destroy it in that first half against Germany. They were so – nobody picked up. There was no marking. There was no talking. There was no man-to-man. There was nothing, just nothing positive that could be taken out of that game. As a player, that's one of those you just got to chalk it up, say, you know what, I never want to feel that experience ever again. I'm never going to feel that experience ever again. And you do something about that for the next time you go out there and play, and you show it with your heart. And even in the third place game against Holland, I don't think that Brazil, that totally bottled, you know, obviously a bit of a freakish penalty that Holland got. Robin is not my favorite, especially not now. And there's a lot of people that are on the sidelines about enjoying soccer that certainly won't watch soccer because of the antics of Aaron Robin. I think he's a disgrace. As good a player he is, I think he's a disgrace. You know, I mean, he clearly admits he got one penalty, and you know, and here he is doing it again against Brazil yesterday. And I think that's disgraceful. You know, and that should be punished so right as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm getting sick and tired of Robin's antics as well. I mean, you're right. When you're a great player like Robin, like Schweinsteiger, now I'm not saying he dives, but I'm just saying, you know, maybe we can say maybe Thomas Mueller, who is an excellent player for Germany, and we saw what he did with Pepe in that first group game between the Germans and the Portuguese, where, yes, Mueller dove. We know that. But Pepe didn't have to go and just give him a headbutt to let him have it a little extra. So
yeah,
I agree
exactly.
with you. That's just so wrong. We cannot allow divers to get away with stuff like this. But unfortunately, 9 times out of 10, the questions are, when does it look like a dive and when does it not look like a dive? And that's going to be always the biggest question ever in the game, Gary, and unfortunately we'll never get an answer.
Well, I mean, we take, you know, maybe 5 seconds to reboot that and replay it, and there's a referee standing on the sideline. You know, in the Premiership, they have the comment that they have the monitors there that, you know, the managers can go over and look at. You know, it's not used in the game, but it's certainly there coming from the TV feeds. When do you say we've got to implement that stuff? You know, when you know, you have it in baseball, you have it in basketball, you have it in football. So every other sport around the world, you have these instant replays. I don't agree with the fact that, you know, like the challenge in the NFL where you sit there and maybe a minute or 2 minutes goes by, because that is disruptive to the game. The whole basis of NFL is a disruptive game. You know, it's 4 downs and you stop after every play. In soccer, you don't. You can play 7 or 8, 10, 15 minutes without the ball going out of play if there's no free kicks and fouls. However, when it comes to a break in the play, I think that it should have been looked at. Fourth official just puts it in the ear of the referee. That was a dive. Okay, now it's a yellow. Guess what? If you're already on a yellow, you're off. And that's just hurt your team. I don't think you can call them back, but I think you can retroactively, without disrupting the game, make a good call. Does that make sense to you? Because that
yes,
in timing,
does.
you're not breaking up the time. You know, the referee calls it as it sees it. You've got to allow that. It's a natural game that just happens as it happens. You can't stop and replay that. So if the referee sees it one way and it goes for a kick outside, or he calls it a penalty, hey, we've got to live with that. Because the Robin one yesterday, clearly outside the box. A lot of the commentators were saying there's definitely a red card for the Brazilian defender. And I think kind of it would have been the other way, and I was giving a free kick to Brazil and given Robin a yellow card. That would have really set a precedent.
Yeah,
and
it really would.
Now, you know, without stopping the game and stopping the flow of play, let, you know, RVP gets a penalty, takes the penalty, they score, goes back up the airline, there's another 30 seconds. You can't tell me that fourth official hasn't had the opportunity to watch 3 or 4 different views of that call and says, you know what, you can't change the play, you can't change the goal that's been given, but you know what, he did dive, give him a booking. You know what, Aaron Robin does that a second time, guess what, he's now off. That will stop that, and that will curb diving instantly. Because
absolutely.
Now they know there's more eyes on them.
No, absolutely. And you know what, Gary? I mean, that was going to lead up to my next question. Should the fourth official have a little more power when it comes to replays? Because obviously he's standing there. He's making sure both benches are behaving themselves. He's handling the substitutions. He's handling the amount of added time that he needs to add at the end of both halves. Shouldn't he also have a little more power when it comes to maybe a replay monitor on his desk to see what has happened so he can relay the information and tell the main official, hey, this is what you missed, and you want to make sure you get the call right. Shouldn't the fourth official have a little more power to help out the main official?
In a normal business, you would say absolutely earn your keep. You know, at least don't just sit there or stand there and just wait until you're called upon. You know, let's make him active in this. You know, if you're afraid of the benches behaving, put one on either side. You know, they do that in parks and recreation leagues all over the world, you know, as a safety precaution. One team sits on one side of the park, one team sits on the other. One referee, one linesman, assistant referee, polices that side, one polices this side for the substitutions. Then when it comes as far as that fourth official, he can constantly be watching the game, watching the monitors, taking notes, reporting back to the referee, and B, that extra pair of eyes that I think that we're now needing. A lot of teams and a lot of leagues locally out here, and I'm sure back in the East Coast and all across America, you know, toyed with two referees, one in either end. And I think that can sort of complicate things because, you know, they both blow up for different things because there's just four sets of eyes, you know, two sets of eyes looking at the same incident but from two different points of view. And that's kind of where you want to be careful because, you know, one's going to call it one way, one's going to be calling it the other way. Which one is right? Which one is wrong? We always naturally stick to the referee that's out in the park. But I think there's an awful lot to be gained by an official that has nothing else to do except for watch the game and watch for fair play. And that's what FIFA keep putting out there. This is about fair play. Watch for that. If it's not happening, take it and do something about it. So I think you're right when it comes to that.
Yeah, and still sticking with this goal line technology in this World Cup, the first time ever seeing it. I know it's not the Hawkeye system, but your overall view of the goal line technology in this World Cup, a positive, a negative, or maybe more of a work in progress?
I think it's a work in progress. I don't really have issues where it's that critical. Go back to Frank Lampard for England against Germany. Well, clearly, you know, we hit the crossbar, went over the line and bounced back out, and it was called as a no-goal. That changed the complexion of that game. Will Germany still have beaten England? Who knows? Well, they did. But that could have changed it drastically in England's favor, which could have drastically changed the outcome of that World Cup. So who knows? I think it's still a work in progress. I don't think it interrupted in any way any of the games. And those that saw it and saw the quick reaction of the way it came out and that it didn't cross the line or it did cross the line, partially cross the line, it worked. So, you know, I believe they'll still come about and make more advances to that as the years go on. But I think for now, for me, it worked. It worked. It's definitely a thing in process. But it worked, and that's what you can ask for.
Absolutely. I think it's a great thing to see, especially it was the goal, I believe, by Karim Benzema against Honduras where his shot, it did hit the far post, and it did not cross the entire goal line, but then when the ball was going across the line, it was knocked over the line by the keeper, and then, of course, the referee's watch signaled goal on the second attempt of the review. And so I think it's a very, very good job. As you said, more work in progress needs to be made. And then the question is this, do they still stay with this type of goal line technology, or would you rather have built-in video cameras drilled inside the posts so you can see the entire ball crossing the goal line or not?
I don't think we need to go that far. I think that, you know, as with the tennis that you see, the Hawkeye, you know, this has worked. There was that one clear situation. Other than that, nothing really too extravagant that was going to make the change in the game flow one way or the other. I think that's yet to be seen. If there's one real moment that's going to be a huge controversy, then you'll see changes. I think now FIFA have implemented the biggest event that they hold, which is the World Cup. I think so they're happy with the way it's going to go. There may be some minor tweaks to it, but I think if they're happy with the way this has gone, this is what you'll see going forward. And then it might start implementing itself into, you know, the Champions League, CONCACAF, elsewhere around the world, and it's a positive thing. You know, people are very much against changing the rules because it's been like this forever. And so if you've got one little instant where this has now changed and people are accepting it, now they'll be a little bit more accepting it of maybe those instant replays where the fourth official can now look at the potential dive that just happened and put it in the ear of the referee. It's not going to change that was a goal or no goal, penalty or no penalty, but he can certainly turn around and say, hey, you know what? Yeah, you know, the replay clearly shows that you cheated, and here's your punishment for it.
Absolutely, definitely. I think we're on the right track here. And I agree with you. I mean, there's always going to be purists of certain sports. Doesn't matter what country they're in. They're going to be upset with maybe changes they feel that it might slow the game up here or there. But I agree with you. I think this is a positive. I think right now, like you said before, it's a work in progress. I think we're pretty good with the Hawkeye, with the goal line technology, and it just needs maybe some fine tweaks here and there. But other than that, so far, I think it's done a pretty good job. And, of course, as we finish up with this World Cup review show and this fantastic event, 2014, let's talk a little bit about the U.S. national team. Overall, no Landon Donovan. And, of course, even if he was going to be on this roster, they said no goals, no points, and the USA gets out of the group, and they lose in extra time to Belgium in the round of 16. But a positive is that it's not get out of the group one World Cup, eliminated in the group stage in the next World Cup. They finally went two consecutive World Cups getting out of the group stage. What are the positives and what are the negatives that the U.S. needs to fix up to try and become a little bit more dangerous as we try to qualify for 2018?
Well, you know, the conundrum here is that you want MLS to succeed, so you want to keep a lot of your homegrown players playing here because then the fans want to go and see that guy that just played in the World Cup in Brazil. However, to get the experience, a lot of players need to go overseas and play to get that sort of Champions League big game experience. And I think we're starting to find that. You know, it doesn't have to be the Liverpools, the Manchester Uniteds, the Arsenals, the Chelseas of this world that you have to play for to get the experience. A lot of players, you know, going to Germany, going to Holland, going to Belgium to play, are not necessarily big-name teams, but they're getting playing time, they're getting experience, and, you know, looking to what Jurgen Klinsmann is trying to do. I just hope the hierarchy there listens to what he's trying to build and sticks with it. And I believe the next 4 years, I honestly see that Klinsmann could be, if he wants to. Now, here's the biggest key of all, is does he want to stay as manager of the U.S. national team? If you can keep him for the next two World Cups, I believe you can get to at least the semifinal of the World Cup within two World Cups, if not get to a final. I definitely think that's on the cards. The way the U.S. has progressed, and Bruce Arena has done a tremendous job over the years. Bob Bradley did a tremendous job, but I think it's a little bit naive about some of the plays that and some of the calls that he made. And then you've got Klinsmann that's gone out there with keeping it low key, you know, understate us. You know, we're not that good. We're okay. Hey, we get out round of 16. We look like we're, you know, golden. So keep it low key. Keep doing what you're doing. He's going to influence U.S. soccer a huge amount in the next 4, 8, 12 years just by taking it back to basics. We always say, take it back to basics. Don't do the complicated stuff. Play the way you're facing. Play in small triangles. Watch Germany today over and over and over again until you're sick of watching it, and that's exactly what you'll see Jurgen Klinsmann is trying to instill in the U.S. team. I think that's a lot to do with why Landon wasn't there. Whether there was backroom issues or not, I don't really care. This is the way I want to play. Can you fit in this system? If I don't think you can fit in this system, then you're not going to be part of my squad. I think that's really where it came down to. I want youngsters that I can coach and create a dynasty with. And I think that's what he's trying to do. He's going to try and really put his mark and win a World Cup with the U.S. I think he firmly believes he can win the World Cup with the USA. And my money's on him to do it, or get damn close to it, if not win it. And it's such a promising prospect and such an exciting time to be around U.S. soccer. For 35 years that I've been in the U.S., it's like, okay, it's coming. We're not quite there yet. It's coming. We're not quite there yet. It's coming. We're not quite there yet. Well, you know what? I believe that if people like you putting your shows on around the country, just really putting your belief, your truth, your belief, your honesty, your hard work, your total, this football matters, every game matters. You and I had this conversation about the third place game yesterday. It matters. Mm-hmm. I don't care. As soon as you put that jersey on and you've got, whether it's USA, you've got Legion, you've got, you know, local Park City team. It doesn't matter. Once you put that on, it means something. Otherwise, you wouldn't be out there. And whilst we're all behind the U.S. or behind the World Cup, we've got a couple of weeks off before it all starts again and the preseason games come out here. We need to keep this going. You know, last World Cup that we had, 3 weeks after it was over, you wouldn't even thought the World Cup had been, because everyone's gone back and forgotten all about it. We need not to forget. We need to not forget. And as long as we don't, it'll start being into our minds that this is a sport we reckon with in this country. And that, you know what? Yes, we can. We can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't wait for that day when the United States finally gets to that World Cup final, depending on who they'll face. Of course, it's always going to be a crapshoot knockout stage. But, you know, I seeing them do it for the 2002 World Cup to get to the quarterfinals, that was probably the last time the United States has gotten as far as they have since the 1930 World Cup, when it was only 13 teams. And
that was tremendous. You know, watching that, you know, middle of the night, Korea, Japan, I mean, that was such passion behind the team. And once again, as soon as it was over, it's like, really? Did it even happen? So we've got to keep that momentum going. And it's guys like you putting your effort out there, putting your radio shows together, and really trying to make the word count that's going. So I applaud you, and thank you for having me on, and that, you know, and everyone else that's been on with you over the past 3 weeks. I can't believe how quickly it's gone, to be honest with you.
It's so fast. It's unbelievable. I mean, we go every single day, three matches, a four-day match for 4 days, 3 days, then two matches at the same time at 12 and 4 o'clock, and then we get to the round of 16 and the quarters, the semis, and here we are in the final. It's all over with. It's all gone. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, major then, withdrawal. You know, the thing is, I'm going to have knee replacement surgery in about a month, and I actually taped all games from day one to now to the final. And so I know what I'm going to be doing next month. I'm going to be sitting there watching every single game over again. And I'm really looking forward to that. You know, that's something, you know, I can sit there, rehab, and just watch every game without any expectations, because you obviously know the results. But looking at it objectively of what can you take out of each game, and I'm really looking forward to that, taking notes out of this and seeing how I can help football going forward.
Absolutely. And, I mean, here's what I'll take away from the national team for the USA. I'll definitely take away that when you have Jurgen Klinsmann that picks this roster, and while I did not really yell as loudly as maybe some other pundits have, other writers have who do follow the national team, you know, picking the right players. And definitely the John Brooks substitution in the second half against Ghana was a big-time move. DeAndre Yedlin, who has looked very good for the Seattle Sounders, picking him, the sub in to help out with that second goal to take that lead against Portugal. And unfortunately, the one negative, of course, is the equalizer in second-half stoppage time. But still, you pick those moments that Jurgen Klinsmann picked his roster, just puts his hand on the kid's shoulder to say, you're my guy, go make something happen. And they do. And it's just been an absolutely fantastic moment. Tim Howard having a sensational round of 16 game, making all those saves, save after save, on an up-and-coming Belgian side that we know is probably going to be dangerous for the next 4 years, probably, depending on what they do in European Cup qualifying, that's going to be in France.
I think you'll see Belgium do very, very well in the Euros coming up in 2 years' time. You know, they're going to not be so much of a dark horse anymore, and they probably could even win it. They've got a lot, and once again, not a lot of huge stars. I mean, most people look at them and go, okay, well, Fellaini's the one name that comes to speak, but they play as a team, and their coach makes little things happen, little changes, just like Jurgen Klinsmann. It's the little things that you do within a game that can make it or break it. And I think that's where the U.S. have really struggled in the past. Is it lack of knowledge? I don't know. Is it lack of experience? I think more so of being in that position at the right time, at the right place. And I think Klinsmann's experience that he's brought made the difference. It's always tough to take on somebody that's not your own, let's say, you know, even though he's a citizen here and lives in the States now. It's tough to swallow sometimes that he's not quite your own. But when he starts getting the results, starts bringing in the players that everyone was questioning, and then all of a sudden they start panning out and look at the results that they got, everyone got behind them. Well, that stuff's forgotten about. It shouldn't even be talked about now because we're all one, and that's all you can think about it. Yes, you know, the two things, you're all as one. You've all got one goal in mind. Everybody's got one goal in mind, and that's to win the World Cup. And the other thing, yes, we can. We can do it.
Absolutely. Before I let you go, Gary, I want to talk about, did you happen to see an updated Facebook picture of Marouane Fellaini?
Yes, with a short haircut.
You mean he finally took off the wig?
Shaved it off. Shaved it off. Yeah.
There goes the fro from the 70s, from the throwback machine.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully Neymar.
He might be a lot quicker as well now. Because I'm sure that was slowing him down.
Definitely. All that hair had to slow him down in the wind tunnel machine. And hopefully Neymar does recover quickly for the Barcelona season.
I'd be very interested, just quickly, I know we've got to go, but Louis van Gaal, I think he made, you know, we were talking about good positive substitution, good moves, and I think that was a luck that he did make when he made the goalkeeping substitution. Could it be stroke of genius, because he's a bigger goalkeeper than Tim Krul? But look at the substitutions and the moves that he made in other games around, and you kind of question, you know, if he does that with Manchester United, I don't think he's going to be a fan, or fans aren't going to be with him a long time if he does do stuff like that. I don't think this goalkeeper he was the only player for Holland that had never played a minute of the World Cup. Every other outfield player and goalkeeper had played in the games. And there was 2 minutes to go in injury time yesterday against Brazil, and he put him in there. So all 24 of his players got to play. And I thought that was a stroke of, you know what, humanity there, that he actually gave everyone a game. Because there's no point. You take all these players, and some of them don't even get a look in. You're just taking them for the experience. Well, you know what? Give them the experience. That's positive. I was a bit nervous about going into the season for Manchester United. So it'll be interesting to see how that one pans out this year.
Oh, absolutely. We'll definitely see what's going to happen there. Of course, before I do let you go, Gary, Luis Suarez is no longer with Liverpool. It looks like apparently he's going to Barcelona. It looks like the deal is done.
75 million. Yeah, you know, that's an awful lot of money for. But apparently he likes Spanish, so you know, a bit of paella every now and again with your meat. I don't know.
Yeah, I was just telling Cardick, actually, unfortunately couldn't make it. He had another engagement to do a post game show. But the La Liga players, all the clubs in La Liga now, they're gonna have to wear shoulder pads just to block the fangs of.
I don't know. You know what? You know, they're talking about, I've read some papers in Spain and talked to just a couple of guys out there in Barcelona and said, oh, well, we have the ability to tame him. We have the ability to tame him. Well, they couldn't do it at Ajax in Holland. They couldn't do it at Liverpool in England. What makes you think you can do it now? You know, he's not going to change his spots. And then he does it, you know, in the biggest stage of all, the World Cup for Uruguay. This guy isn't going to change. He isn't going to change. Sooner or later, it's going to happen again. And it will. And we talked about this in previous shows. At what point does he get banned for life? Does he? And if this happened in a pub, outside a pub, outside a club, outside a football match, he's going to jail. Somebody's going to get him arrested, and he's going to go to jail in due time. How come you do it in a football game? There's a free pass. How can you be? How can you get a free pass? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely correct, and we don't know what's going on. Hopefully this will finally be the last straw on Luis Suarez and this whole thing
gets
taken care of.
It's such a shame. What a tremendous player. I mean, he's an old-fashioned poacher. He knows how to score goals. He's a good football player, and he's a great goal scorer. And it's such a shame to see that. but he's doing it to himself.
Absolutely. Gary, I appreciate the time. I always thank you for being on the show. I'll talk to you soon, my friend. Good luck with your knee surgery, and I'll talk to you soon.
Hey, great to talk to you. Good luck with the new season. I'm getting ready. We're going to watch some MLS coming up in a little while, so I'm looking forward to a couple of games on next. And we have a great rest of the season. If you people out there, get out and watch a game. It's the only way we're going to make this sort of sport survive in this country.
Absolutely. Thank you again, Gary. I'll talk to you soon.
Take care, buddy. Bye now.
Bye-bye. And that's Gary Richards, former Fox Soccer analyst. You know, very, very fortunate to have him on. Join me tomorrow as we'll continue on this American season of MLS and U.S. Open Cup tomorrow. Lamar Hunt, U.S. Open Cup quarterfinal show on the review at 8 Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. And then on Tuesday, as we continue on with the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much. Congratulations to Germany as they win their fourth World Cup. Bye-bye for now. Take care, everybody.